Hi, I'm Reverend Carol Saunders, host of the Spiritual Forum. I'm here with a lot of interesting people who are consciously walking the spiritual path, experiencing and expressing the divine in unique ways and through unique lenses. Everyone here has wisdom to share and an interesting story to tell, all to inspire you on your spiritual path. Welcome to the Forum. Welcome, everyone, to the Spiritual Forum. I'm so glad you're here. Just got a really short run-up today. I want to say thank you to Stephanie for contributing to the Spiritual Forum podcast. Really appreciate any contributions, any donations that come, because that's what keeps us going. So thanks so much, Stephanie. I want to dig right into today's topic because I think this is so important for us. I think this is what is up for humanity on this planet at this time. And that is the topic of love and embodying love and awakening to it. So my guest is Nicola Amadora, and she teaches a refreshingly real and embodied way of spirituality to unleash love for the great turning in our lives and in this world. For 3 decades, she's been guiding thousands of people as a spiritual teacher, psychologist, women leader, author, and speaker worldwide. She's the founder of Living Connection and The Deep Feminine Way, and author of the book, Love Unleashed. I love the name Love Unleashed. So we're going to be digging into this today. Welcome, Nicola.
Thank you so much for having me here, Carol. I'm really honored.
Yeah, I know we're going to have a really lively and fun conversation because we've been talking before we even hit that record button. And you are right now, you are in Portugal, correct?
Yes.
And I just love the idea. I've said this many times, but I just love the idea that I could be sitting here in the United States, Wisconsin, and you're over there in Portugal, and you're of German descent, and we can be talking at this moment about, you know, what is arising in us. And as I said, and I think you would agree, this very, very important topic of love. So I'd love to know from you a little bit about your story and how you got to writing this book on love and why you named it Love Unleashed. And we all have experiences with love, but something really, really within you inspired you to share this wisdom with the world.
Yeah, this is kind of, when I look outside, you know, outside my window, you can see the ocean and the waves are huge right now from the Atlantic. And I feel like they're kind of the symbol of the picture of what we're going through in our world as something unleashed. And at the same time, I think in order to ride those waves of turmoil and crisis and all what's happening, we need to unleash love. I believe that's the only thing that can actually help us to turn the tide in our own lives, but also in this world right now. And for me, you know, my story started very early because, you know, I didn't want to write on love because it's been so misused, the word, and overused, and even in the spiritual scene, love and light. I was like, but then it came from within the whole time. The book is called Love Unleashed, subtitle, How to Rise in a World on the Edge. Now I realize why it needed to be that title, because now it came out through the publisher. And it's exactly in this time, this book is perfect for it. So, and when I started early on in my journey, it was like, you know, I remember literally when I was 14, where I was sitting in a really sad place inside of me. And I was ready. I mean, I'm just going to be frank here. I was ready to take my life because of the level of suffering I experienced throughout my entire childhood and the horror I experienced. And I'm not going to go into that in detail. But it was one of those pivotal moments where I had a knife in my hand. And there was this moment of like, okay, this knowing from deep inside, I either kill myself or I go crazy because of the level of suffering, or something in me knew, or I wake up. At that time, I didn't have a concept or any knowledge of what it means to wake up. And Germany at that time was also kind of in the sleep ages, you know, it was all on the material. A lot of it, the attention was on the material, and well, it still is in part, but so something in me just, in that moment, it was like as if time stood still. And there's something deep that arose inside of me that knew. Wake up. Now, your life depends on it, and you're meant to be on this planet for a bigger reason than you have any idea of. So that stopped me in my tracks, sucking deep in a voice. It was like cutting through all the stuff. And it came from my heart, because in all the suffering I experienced, I kept something alive. I have no idea how I did it as a child, to stay connected to my heart, to that flame. And from that moment forth, when I said, yes, show me, that was the moment I was guided to find a book somewhere in a bookstore on the last shelf in the corner on meditation. I met this odd lady in a... in a house that I was guided into. And I heard she was teaching meditation, and I knocked on her door, and she's like, come in for tea. And yes, I'm happy to show you. And she was really old grandma. It was beautiful. So I learned first from her. And then, of course, the journey unfolded, incredibly magical. Because it led me to, you know, work with Mother Teresa. It led me to go and study with saints in the Himalayas and with yoginis. And I was in ashrams. I was obsessed, literally. Because what it did for me was that igniting that spiritual spark, that heart spark, was answering such an incredible longing inside that I had since I was a child, to find what true love is, to experience it, to know it from the depth of my being. Because you see, you often when you have a wound inside, that the deepest wound inside, it's also the gateway to your awakening, to your calling, to your mission. And for me, it was because I was so unloved in my childhood. And again, without going into too much details, but my mother was really severely insane and cruel on a daily basis. And there was a level of suffering that I wish for no child should experience that. But I vowed that I'm going to find a way to turn that suffering into gold. That was my vow. And I vowed that I would find what true love really is, not what our culture tells us, not what Hollywood tells us, not all the little love and light books that you read. I wanted to know the real thing. And because that level of suffering was like, it was relentless of driving me. Literally, I was like the bone digger, you know, like you. Yeah, that's the surface. No, further, further, further. So I kept searching and digging, and I got tastes, and I got definitely experiences that were mystical, deeply awakening, deeply recognizing my oneness with all beings and the love that is eternal, and experiencing literally the grace of the divine upon me, where it was like, your prayer is going to be answered. And in this moment, and in this moment, again and again, I had these incredible, what I call, it's grace, really, these mystical awakenings. And they went deeper each time. I could also feel there was a longing inside of me. I need to embody this. I need to live this on this earth. Because that realization and recognition is just one part. And that's kind of the easier part. But how then do you actualize it? How then do you live it in a world that's both beautiful and bloody, really? And messy in the relationships, in my daily walk. And so I was, of course, I went into therapy because I definitely needed it. You know, and especially when the spiritual energy comes, it starts unraveling and it starts bringing up the old traumas for everyone. And I think sometimes people are surprised by that, but that's the big clear out, the big cleaning. And I was asked, you know, to live it through my hands, through my way of speaking, through my relationships. There was so much to learn at the same time. But I had devoted myself to, yeah, really, to be honest, to the truth, to love itself. That was my call, love no matter what. And yeah, and it did lead me also to the feminine, but that would be another podcast. For now, it's definitely a sense. And my test, I think you asked me to speak a little bit on it. So I'm going to speak on it. It's a bit of a vulnerable piece here, but I think I have many tests, you know, but. And they don't end. But one of them was a really major one where I could feel at some point I knew I had to go back to Germany. I was living in California at that time and I had already a child in a spiritual center. I was called back to meet my mother, who was in a mental institution, and to meet the woman who had brought so much incredible pain into my life. In the past, you know, when I was around 18, I was all of love and light. And of course, I blessed my mother and it's all fine. But, you know, when I started undigging and unraveling, there was yeah, not just pain, there was grief and fury and everything. So when I came to her and saw her, and she died 3 days later, I hadn't seen her for a long time, and it was that moment where she had four moments, just a moment of clarity, and she looked at me, and then she said to my friend, "I was a really good mother to her, wasn't I?" She looks at me, and something in me said something that completely surprised me. "Yes, you were. And I love you. And I love you." That's the words that came out of my mouth. That was my heart. And in that moment, when I held her hand, I knew it was the truth. I just knew it in every cell of my body. And in that moment, I knew I had turned that suffering to gold.
Wow.
And I felt liberated. I felt mm-hmm. completely liberated after that.
I mean, that story is remarkable. You tell it in the middle of your book, which I think is an interesting placement for it. And as I shared before I hit the record button, I think that story is, that's it. I mean, that's the path that we're all on. In our own way. Now, not all of us had the same situation with the mother that you did, but to be able to face whatever it is or whomever it is who has wronged us, even ourselves, or especially ourselves, And to be able to come to this place, not just saying I love you, but actually embodying it and knowing it, that's the spiritual journey. And this is why I thought your story was so fantastic, because it's so inspirational. It's like you have laid the path and said, I went from here to here. And it wasn't an easy journey. It was an arduous journey. It was a difficult journey. It was a painful journey, a journey of suffering. And this is where I ended up. And this is, I think, what everything is about on our planet right now. And I want to talk about that, but I want to put that on the side for just a second, because there are many other things I want to pull out of the story that you just told. And I think it's just really important for my listeners to really get that, first of all, we all long for love, you know, that this is a universal condition that every human being longs for love. There's not a human being that doesn't long for love. They can say one thing, but that is one thing that we all have in common. There was a point in your story, I think it was when you were 16 and you were, you know, facing these decisions, and you surrendered yourself, I interpret, to the divine. You surrendered yourself. Like there's something else, not knowing what it is. And this is what I really want to bring home, because I've had a similar experience where I just got to a point in my life where it was like, you know, show me. I don't know where I'm going. Just I'm ready to follow this path. And what I find so interesting is when a person gets to that place where they fully surrender themselves in that way, that a path shows up, something shows up, this woman showed up, this all of these opportunities showed up because you said yes. To me, I say you said yes to God, you said yes to love, you said yes to the divine, whatever words people want to have for it is fine. But I think people get kind of afraid of stepping on this path because they don't know where to go, what steps to take. And they don't have to know, especially they don't have to know, if you get to that surrendering point, within minutes sometimes, something will show up. You'll get a phone call. Yeah. You'll see a book. You'll... Go ahead.
It's absolutely true. And because we're so terrified of the unknown, the mind is terrified of the unknown. And sometimes what it takes is for a person to be bottoming out, like... Mm-hmm. What you're saying about, okay, it's easy to say to surrender, but it's not so easy to do it, because there's always the mind says, well, I'll just keep my door open over there. And what is this, you know, the feminine or the god or the goddess? And this is like, well, I'm not so sure. I have control. The mind likes control. I mean, we look into the world. We love to control. We have the idea we're in control. But the soul, and I think that's what I think when you're pointing to that, the soul has a different agenda than our personality. And at some point, you know, like you had that also, that experience in your own way, where either the longing becomes so strong or the pain or the... something is urging from so deep that you cannot shut it up. And sometimes we just have to bottom out, because we're just, even if you stand there and there's five paths and you don't know where to go, maybe in that moment there comes that willingness. I think it's, we need just a willingness to say, okay, there's something greater here. How about if I get curious, if I just say a small yes and then see where it leads me, and then a next yes, and maybe at some point comes that big yes all the way. I don't think for most people to say that big yes and really feel it and mean it is possible. I mean, it's like, you know, for me, it was like life or death, basically, so... But for many, I would say, you know, there's that willingness. You only need the willingness to say, okay, show me, as you said, a different way. A way that is whole that is of benefit.
Yeah, and I think you make a really good point. We tend to dramatize these things, like the big yes. this is something that worthy of a movie or something, but just a little yes, and to move some portion of our willfulness to willingness. That willfulness is that control. Like, I don't want to lose any control. But the ride is so interesting. The path is so interesting when you turn some part of your willfulness into willingness. It's just so interesting how this flow of universal love that we're immersed in and the soul's yearning and wanting to lead, it takes you to the places that was your next step. It just does. And it's just fascinating. And that's so much more fun and more interesting than planning out your day or planning out your life. So there's just so much opportunity.
Yeah, I think a lot, what you're pointing to is a lot. There's a lot of that in that book, you know, also in that chapter, Wisdom for Crazy Times. How do you ride the waves as we all, at this point, I believe, we've come so much to the edge. We need to learn how to walk and ride into the unknown. And
that's
because feet wet and our bodies wet and get like, okay, we don't know what is the next wave. But what you can learn is like ride the wave and go with the deeper universal flow that has a deep knowing of where your ship needs to land.
Yeah, I definitely like that part of your book. I want to quote a couple things. This is on the first chapter. You said, the pathless path of love is not for the faint-hearted, though. So I love that, the pathless path. So there's no clarity to what this path is, but it is a path. But it's not like very, very clear. And you say, be assured, love's power leads from the shore of suffering to liberation and knows the way even through the most impossible situations. Now, this is where I think it gets really interesting. There is no savior at this time. So many of us are looking for somebody out there to save us. It is up to each of us in this crucial time. I believe it matters more than ever that we wake up, cultivate our abilities, and unshackle our gift to the world as if it is our final day. Do you hear the sound of the rising tide? I could keep quoting your book, but I thought that was really... I thought that was really beautiful, because throughout history, people have, you know, we give up our power to politicians, to leaders, to authorities, to the church, to the government, to whatever, to our corporation, to whatever it is, as if this is going to help us. This is going to be the safety net for us. And there is no savior. This is up to us to awaken, to love, and to embody it. And I'm thinking that we're in such strange times now because we've brought ourselves to this place.
We did, yes.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. I was kind of interested in your thoughts on that as well.
Oh, I also love that you quoted this piece, by the way, because it's not just that we place our power to the governments but we place our power to some distant God somewhere who will come one day to save us from the mess we made. But how are we going to learn? We're not going to learn a thing if we keep being saved from the mess we make. And there's this piece like, okay, now is the time of the reckoning and the time of, well, you could also call it the apocalypse. It's a beautiful word because it also means revelation.
Yes.
But it implies we're facing what's here.
Yes.
To really face it, but not from this like fear and contraction and trying to fix it all. First of all, face it and to open to it all. I because these times, they are so extreme. I mean, so much We have the climate crisis going on. We have the refugees going on. I mean, there's so much coming to the surface, you know, and coming to a, yeah, to a point there. And the question is, well, are we going to make it? I mean, the planet will survive without us, but are we? And
yeah,
I think it's not just about our survival. It's also like, really, this can be the greatest opportunity of our life, because so much help is coming in from all sides. So many beings and holy beings and animals and the plant kingdom, and so many people are helping. I think it's unprecedented what's happening in this time. Huge tidal wave of spiritual awakening is happening, which really is something to celebrate, I think. And that's the good side of it. And so we have this incredible times we are in. And yes, we have the pressure. We're in the pressure cooker right now. So that's catapulting many into an awakening that they wouldn't have had that before or gone on a spiritual path. It's happening now.
It's like what you were talking about before, hitting bottom. Like as a species, we may have to hit bottom before we can, you know, turn around and say, show us. But something that came to me when you were talking, when you said, you know, we give up our power to some external God out there who's going to come and save us from this mess we made. And my definition of God is love. You know, the God is love. So it is the power of love. And you've talked about how, you know, love is, it's mistaken. It's not that Hollywood stuff. It's not that ooey gooey mushy, oh, I love you, I love you. Love is tough too. So let's just say there was an external power out there, and I'm not asserting that or not, but if it's love, why would it sweep in and say, oh, let me save you from the mess you made? That's not what love would do.
No.
Love would say, you know, you created this, and you are a creative being, and you have the opportunity to create yourself something else. And
yeah.
So, you know, yeah. This idea that somebody's going to save us because that's the loving thing to do. That's not the loving thing to do. The loving thing to do is to let us create something more beautiful, that's more in tune with our soul's desires, that's more in the resonance of love that I believe that we were all born into. And that's our opportunity. And that's the really cool thing about being alive at this time. It's like things are either going down, or they're going to go down, 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 or they're going to go down, or we're going to go, wow, you know, show us something different, and we want to create something different, and we're here for it.
Yeah. And it's exactly that way, what you describe, you know, it's like that. Why would love do that? It isn't love. You know, there's moments that are really, it's really important to know that there is tremendous, tremendous support around us and with us. And love is always looking out for us. Yeah, you know, there's always the grace there if you call on it.
Yes.
And the help. But how does a child learn to walk? Well, we fall, we get up again. We fall. Nobody can do that for us. And if we keep pouring the poison into the river, well, at some point it's kind of like, well, drink the poison, drink the water and sink and check it out what happens. You can't just sit there and imagine that all the great divas will always clean up our mess. We never grow. We will never do anything different than hoping that our parents will just clean up our mess. And I think at this point it's kind of like a call also that we not just face it and get our hands a little bit dirty, but that it's not just about cleaning up the mess and facing, but that we, in the midst of the rubble, we grow the plants, the flowers, the healthy life, that in the midst of, you know, so many difficulties, that we also dare to go there and bring the seeds of new life into it. You know, because love says, well, even though things are difficult, you still can plant a flower here. And I don't mean that just, I don't just mean that literal. I mean that also, you know, even if you have difficulties in a relationship, there's still always the possibility to plant a seed of love in the midst of your conflict. You just need to learn how.
Yeah, it is a choice. And it is something that in every moment we can choose to plant that seed. Because we can do it literally. Literally planting a flower is an act of love, and nurturing it and nurturing the soil and watching it grow. And that's probably something that a lot of people would take action on. But then the next thing you say is the relationship or the encounter. Every encounter, I think, can be a holy encounter. Every encounter can be an encounter of love or disconnection, separation, whatever we choose. And so I think one of the things that we're talking about is to bring love into manifestation in this world. It's really up to us. And it's not always the big, huge thing. It can be the big, huge forgiveness thing, but it could also be this encounter that I have with the person who delivers my mail, or the person who is cutting me off on the road, or the person who just turned down my book proposal, or whatever it is, the one who just has annoying habits, whatever it is that we can do to be love in that space, that we are adding to this transformative power that's happening on this planet now.
I'm a big fan of the small acts that have a big impact. Like you said, you know, with your mailbox guy, I had such magical encounters with people of all walks of life. The moment I opened my heart and was willing to actually let love come through and love them too, in a way that was more like, okay, so with the mailbox guy, I didn't just pick up the mail. I spoke with him. I talked with him about his family, about his life. I treated him as a valuable human being. And I noticed that a lot of people, like we began this interview with, you know, just longing to be loved. And It doesn't mean we have to feed every single hole in people. That's also not the most loving thing to do, but to walk in that field of love that can grow through by your hands, by our words with another, by, you know, encountering the bus driver and actually saying good morning instead of walking by, or to say, okay, there's a conflict with somebody and they're really not nice. It doesn't mean that you have to get nasty. I mean, these are simple things. Because when we're triggered and when we have, you know, stuff, reactions coming up, it's very fast to go into the reaction train. The sacred moment. Okay, what am I actually committed to live? And to ask, okay, so can I pause here before I lash out or before I collapse and hide in the corner? Or how about I just take a moment and feel into me here and connect with the sacred, connect with the love, just a tiny little bit through my breath, through my feeling the feet on the ground and just saying, okay, well, is this what I'm about to say going to be of benefit? If not, don't say it. And if it is, go ahead. But this question that to pause and ask, okay, what am I actually committed to in my life to live and to bring it into our day to day? That's really where I think the rubber meets the road, as they say. This is where the pearl becomes like it shines forth.
I think very few people know what they're committed to. And I know that for myself too, during my whole journey, I remember somebody once asking me, what are you committed to? And going, what? Well, I got to think about that. So, but we could say that we're committed to love, but if we really are committed to love, then we would do our best every day, embody that in our encounters. And so I think we just need to remind us that we all long for love, and what you want, you really have to kind of put out. You know, if you want love, you really have to give love. And that's really part of a universal law. I just want to share a really quick story that came to me when you're talking, because I think these encounters, I call them holy encounters, because we can be alive for a long time on the planet, but how much of our life are we really alive? How much is a distinct memory? Like, I remember that person, that situation. There's so many forgettable encounters that we have because we don't really engage. And the one I'm about to tell, I'll be brief, but it's just so funny when I think about my whole life, why I remember this one, because I still don't even know this person's name. And I was at the gym and I was doing this machine, and in between sets, I was on my phone, you know, checking something or listening to something or whatever. And this man came up who wanted to be on the machine I was on. And he kind of was like, you know, are you ever going to get off your phone? And I thought, you know, he's kind of right. I should do my next set. And what happened? About a minute later, he tapped me on my shoulder and he said, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry that I was rude that way. And I said to him, really, you know, you weren't rude. I was rude. You made me realize that I was rude, that I was holding this machine for longer than I needed to. I tell the story because it was a magical encounter. I don't think I'm conveying this quite right, but it was a magical encounter where two people had a misunderstanding that could have been some thing that would ruin each other's day, but it ended up being something that transcended all of that. And now I still don't even know his name, but I see him at the gym and we always wave and it's like we're friends. And it's because we made something happen there that I would call love, not in the, you know, Hollywood romantic, that kind of thing, but soul to soul. That's it was it. Just an understanding.
It's a beautiful story, and I got it immediately, and I imagine all the listeners got it immediately.
I hope so.
Yeah, and it was very easy because this is the true holy encounter. This is because you're not just meeting from soul to soul. You also met as human beings who are fallible. Like,
yes,
okay, I was rude, and I was rude. And that is the meeting of hearts right there. And it was, nobody was defensive. Nobody was attacking. It was like, wow, I realized I was rude and he was rude. And it's that beautiful, I think the holy, sometimes we have this view of the holy is somewhere big and out there and the divine. And here I am, the little human being who keeps screwing up. But I think there's something that I feel very strong. Human and divine is when that is united, there the holy comes through. And you were vulnerable human beings, you know, bumbled around. Mm-hmm, and what also came through was that willingness to be in touch with each other and touch for a moment with that respect, with that love. And so this made the whole encounter holy. I find that these are the kind of stories I feel is almost like they make a trail across the world. They spark, you know, a town, a little drop where that happened. And that's what brings that love in that. You know, when you said about, you know, we can't experience really true love unless we also give it. There is, however, a piece that I want to bring in. I interested also in the book. It's the willingness to also receive the love.
Mm-hmm.
Because so often we miss it. It's almost like with all the hunger you have, you're walking around with this one eye always like looking out, where's the love for me? Where's the attention for me? Where is it? Where is it? And who is going to give it? And then maybe you start giving it in order to get love. It becomes like this exchange thing, which is not really the best way either. But when we pay attention to how we keep love out and see how can I open myself to actually receive in this moment a compliment from another person, or how can I receive the love in this moment that's here when the sun is shining and, you know, the sound of the waves are coming in. Life is continuously loving us. We just don't notice.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And at the bottom of it, in my experience, there is just love. It's not the giving or the receiving. It just is love. The question we all have is, and how do you live it? How do you embody it? And I think that's a big part of the book, you know, instead of coming from the should, that you're moved from within, something is open. And then naturally beginning to live you. That's, I think, where the wonderment begins to happen. And you noticed it in your encounter with men.
Yeah, and you talk in the book about these two wings, this like an awareness and an embodiment. And I think many of us, when it comes to love or spiritual anything, that we first take it as a concept. It's a conceptual thing. Mm-hmm. And we can read about it and we can hear stories about it and we can pray about it. We can write about it. But that's not it.
So, I love the word that you keep repeating, about it. That's exactly
yes.
About it.
Yes. That's a separation. It's over there and right, exactly. I'm glad you noticed that. So then the embodiment is like the other wing. Like the awareness is important, but unless you embrace it or embody it, that it's not really what's...
It's not lived.
Yeah, it's not lived. So yeah. What would you tell people who are listening now about... Because, you know, it's hard to say, just go out and embody it. Just go embody it. Go embrace it. Go live it.
Yeah, it would be actually, it just kind of would be simple if we all, you know, realized love and just live it. What's the problem? Yeah, and why don't we do it? Yeah.
Just do it.
And then comes the spiritual shoulding, you know, where you just like, oh, I should be more loving. Why am I not more loving? And I want to be loved. It becomes this whole trip. I think there is that's the piece where it comes in like the... what I call, you know, a living prayer, to become that living prayer. One thing is you don't need to become as who you are. You already are that.
Yeah.
However, here's the becoming piece, the walking it, the living it, the bringing it into the thick of it, you know, all that's going on. That requires practice. That becomes, and living prayer is a practice. You walk with a prayer on your lips every day and you start aligning your actions to it. And you need to learn some skills how to relate in a more loving, truly loving way, well, to yourself, to others, to really all beings. So that's the part where we do need some training. We do need some practice. For the other part, well, you know, you can have a mystical awakening into your true nature and you're like, wow, I am love. I've seen people walk around like that in California. It's very common. And I think it's great. And hallelujah. And then that's the labor of love. How do you embody it when with your kids? How do you embody it when somebody pisses you off? And the what? What do you do? Do you forget who you are in that moment? Most likely. How do you remember? So that's what both the spiritual practice comes in, and the other part when I wrote in the book is like, you know, you need the growth of your personality. You need the healing of your traumas, because otherwise we're just passing it on and then covering mm-hmm. it with love and light. We're so peaceful, and yet the ball of heavy trauma you deliver with it too, just underneath. So that's why I'm a big fan of saying, you know, no, this is not about spiritual bypassing. This is about the real thing of embodying it. And when we look into the world of those people that you or the listeners are inspired by, these are people like, whether we take Gandhi or we take John F. Kennedy or we take Mary Magdalena or any great being, what have they all accomplished? What made them so great? And I would say they have realized to a certain extent who they are, but they all brought it in. They lived it and they did sweat through it. They did not, none of them had an easy pass. And it was like they devoted themselves, they committed themselves. And you can see it even with Dalai Lama. It's a deep commitment from his side towards compassion. Or when you look at great women in our world, how were they able to change things in our world? Well, they followed a deeper calling. Everyone has a deeper calling inside. And they were committed to something that's greater than just our personhood. And at the same time, they had to deal with the humanness, not to get rid of our humanness, but mm-hmm. to really embrace it. It was like we talked privately before our interview, and you know, when we said like this whole transcendence trip to get out of the body, to just fly into the higher realms, that's wonderful and beginning to do for people. But at some point, the question is, and why are you here on earth that you landed in a body? If you try to constantly get out of it, you have no impact. And in the world, you cannot truly embody love or whatever calling you carry in your soul. And that would be a very sad story. Because right now I feel everybody is actually needed with all hands on deck on the mm-hmm. ship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is interesting that a lot of the, you know, quote, spiritual conversations going on in the world are about ascending somewhere else or somehow. And it's been around since the beginning of religion, I think, too. How do we transcend this horrible place? And mm-hmm. we completely miss that we are creating this place and that we can create something else. But I love what you say. Why are we here? I mean, we're here in these bodies, here on this planet at this time for some reason. Now, whether that's some sort of preordained reason, or we just make it our purpose. I also love how you remind us that we're showered with love all the time, with the wind on our face, the sprouting flower, the waves, the clouds, just the beauty of the world is just constantly loving us and pouring love and grace and joy into us. It's everywhere. It's what everything is made of. It's what we're made of. So to ignore our embodiment here on this planet, it's not the spiritual path. We're talking about the spiritual path, everybody who's listening. We're talking about the hard stuff, walking through the suffering, walking through the difficulty, and saying yes to love over and over again. And I'm reminded, back to my little story, where the man who kind of was rude to me first. I was rude to him first, and he was rude to me. But then he came. What he did is he did that pause. He went away. Something caused him to come back. Like within a minute, something caused him to come back and say, "I apologize. I'm so sorry. I was rude." What was that space? And I'm pointing that out because you pointed out too. That is the space that we have to, when we act out of separation and fear, annoyance, frustration, defensiveness, whatever it is, we don't have to just leave it there. We have the space that we can go back and kind of clean it up a little bit. And that's like, we start practicing that a little bit, then it gets easier and easier, and you probably will just be kind naturally, more naturally going forward.
That's exactly that, and part of the embodiment. And the embodiment is not just to deal with the hard stuff and walk through it. It's also to taking joy in what, in your story when you both did that. Look what joy you got from it.
Yeah.
You know, it's that something is aligned here. Something is attuned. And yes, he took the first step by pausing from the reacting train, going to the response train, which means like he came from his heart and he kept it very simple. And that the holy is usually very simple and intimate with life, very intimate.
I love these little miracles. It's always, always available to us. I know we're kind of coming. Gosh, this hour has raced by.
It's always fun.
I know, this has been fun. I want to give you the last word, but before we do that, in your chapter on Wisdom for Crazy Times, which is also one of my favorites, you talk about how we're all kind of feeling this disorientation and fear in the world that we're in. But then you go on and you say, do not follow the sheep and do not succumb to control in order to feel safe. Do not reach for the familiar, how things used to be, in order to feel safe. As tempting as it may be, it's only a temporary fix, like drinking from the same cup every morning, but it will not help you when the ship has crashed and you have to find a way to survive and thrive, not just for your own sake, but for all life here on earth. And this idea that we cannot just build on a rotten foundation, you also talk about that too, that I think what we're up to right now is shaking the foundations of the world we live in and building a new foundation and not just keep piling stuff on this one, because that's where we are right now. It's like not working. So this following the path, following everybody else and not succumbing to this desire we have for safety. To me, that's so important because I don't think anything is ever 100% safe. And also everything is always 100% safe because we're safe in ourselves and we're safe in the divine within us.
Yes. I think it's good to keep speak on the safety piece, you know, because ultimately our survival brain just wants to be safe, you know, and then has the delusion, if I do this or that, then I will be safe. But deep down, there is the true safety. I just want to add this piece here from the book, because you wrote from there. Seek not the fleeting safety of this world, my friend, but take refuge in the only safety there is, your heart, the truth itself, or call it love. That is safe. And everything else will be and is shaken, and especially if the foundation is rotten. Well, what you do, you have to rip out the rotten pieces and in order to build a house that is, you know, a truly sacred home.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I'm reminded of in the Gospels, we're told to love one another.
It's very simple.
We complicate it with all this stuff. It's very, very simple. Love one another. That's it. That's the message.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's in every spiritual tradition. I mean,
yes, it is. Yeah.
I was, you know, Buddhist teacher in many different traditions. It's in every tradition and its own version. And the truth is always very simple. And yet we have a little problem with that.
We like complication.
Well, we kind of, you know, it's our conditioning, you know, it's also that seeking safety continually outside, which always will fail. It will fail. It cannot be otherwise because the world is impermanent. And how do you then, you know, sail on that ship called humanity when you don't know what's around the next corner and you have no idea if the sharks will jump up and bite you or something? Do you not walk around and be completely freaked out all the time or depressed or, you know, saddened, which I understand all these feelings are normal in our time also. And as human beings, we have them. But how do we ride our ship through all this, what is here? And I think there's that remembrance of there is a deeper safety, an anchor where you can throw that anchor at any moment in your day, in whatever is going on, anchor all the way to the love that holds you always, or the peace that is there, even if you don't feel peaceful, or the arms of the divine, whatever is resonant for you. The truth is always here. It will never be destroyed. What is true cannot be, will not be, is impossible to destroy and cannot be harmed. And in that moment, when you rest into that, there's something that feels like, okay, that's what can carry you and catapult you forward to steer the ship and see where is it going, grow some, you know, leave some goodness behind wherever you walk. I mean, that's really as simple as it gets, and not so easy. So therefore, we need a book, or we need a friend, or we need a guide. You know, that's what the big reason why I wrote this book was not only because I was told to write the book, but also because I felt like I just want to give a handbook. It was full of stories that it's inspiring, real stories and adventurous stories, and at the same time also, you know, pouring some wisdom into it with some practices people can do. And to be able to read this book, like, here's a chapter you want to read for this week, and then you read another chapter another day. It's like every chapter stands on its own, and yet it threads the pearls together in a whole wholesome, well, I call it the symphony, you know, for love, to live love.
Yeah, well, I just really, really appreciate the gift that you've given to the world of yourself and this book, and bringing love, you know, putting love back on back on the front burner of life. It's so important that we decide for ourselves and make this choice, that we make a choice for love. Now, do you want to close with a poem that you found in your book?
Yeah. Right. So it's in the book. The book has a few poems of mine in it, and it's in the chapter of A Heart Wide Open. And the poem is called Love No Matter What. All the way through, meet with courage storms and challenges that strengthen you. Rise in heavenly glories and gentle winds that lift your soul, my love. Love, no matter what, whether you're crowned and praised by cheering crowds or stoned and hanged on this world's cross. Love, no matter what, through gain and loss in this life's play, for love will make you shine. You are that blazing light in which no shadow can exist, and truth just is. Love no matter what, for no reason, but for the sake of love. Your heart is big enough.
Well, I think that is a perfect note to complete our conversation. And I know that this has blessed people and hopefully inspired people to love no matter what. That's the ticket. That's what we're talking about, is to love no matter what. And as we go through these apocalyptic times, they're interesting times. Mm-hmm. And I think just keeping that poem in the forefront of our minds and our hearts, especially, that we can do this.
Mm-hmm. We can, because we're born for it.
Yeah, we're right. Born for it, and we're here for it.
That's what we're born for.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Nicola, for sharing with me today and for putting this wonderful book out. And I just knew this was going to be a fun conversation, and it met and exceeded my expectations. I'm just so glad that we connected.
Oh, it was such a beautiful flow, a holy flow between us. And I think there were many pieces that were on the table of this feast here. So I really hope any listeners or viewer will get something for yourself, that a treasure you take with you, and maybe buy the book too.
Yeah, and I'd love to have you back on. We'll talk about the feminine that next time, because I think you said it's a whole nother book. It's a whole nother podcast. So we'll have you back on. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today, for listening, and I now close the Spiritual Forum, but join me again next week with my next guest. Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, you can let me know by leaving a positive rating and review on your favorite podcast app, or make a tax-deductible donation at thespiritualforum.org. The Spiritual Forum is a podcast, prayer, and retreat ministry affiliated with Unity Worldwide Ministries. Thank you again for being a part of the Spiritual Forum community. And remember, you are an amazing, divine, and powerful being.